Every time it came back to parents are a pain in the ass. Every single time, you know, they don't know how, and they didn't know how to deal with parents, you know, and parents at the end of the day just want what's best for their kid. We all know that.
Of course.
So I'll fight you. And I'm like, sweet as, you're on. Well, he punched the living shit out of me. The whole fight, I just jabbed and moved around forever. And by after, it was only three rounds of a minute and a half. By the third round, he was walking straight through my jab. It wasn't, it was like custard. And the first one she ever did, the coming down the chute, everyone on both sides of the chute were just in tears. And I'm trying to cry and I'm trying to run behind her, and she's kind of struggling away there. And from there, I've always been the one, like, don't worry about your limitations. Let's see what you can do.
Some conversations make you think, some make you laugh. This one does both, and then it hits you right in the heart. Today's guest is Mark Big Tooks Tookie, former NRL hardman, cult hero, community builder, and one of the most genuine people you'll hear from in sport. From starting at the South Queensland Crushers to cult status at the Eels, a grand final run with the Warriors, and time playing in the UK, Tooks lived the full footy journey. But what he's doing after footy might be even more powerful. This is a fun, loose, and meaningful chat about making your life fun, just getting things done and refusing to put limits on what's possible in sport, in parenting, and in life. We talk men's mental health, disability and inclusion, educating sports parents, finding purpose beyond retirement, losing a brother and a mate to suicide, and one unforgettable moment helping his daughter with cerebral palsy cross the finish line of a triathlon. If you love your sport, care about people, and believe in giving back, you're going to love this one. I'm Ian Hawkins, and this is Sport is Life. The purpose of sport, as I see it, is to see your vision become a reality, find your voice, create strong connections, and learn to trust your body. Okay, Mark, how are you going?
G'day, buddy. How are you?
Going well. Now, you're at work now. You are working in Logan, but for the Warriors. So the Warriors have a footprint in southeast Queensland.
Bit weird, yes. We've just been granted like a five-year contract here in Logan with another 5 years at the end of that, depending on how it goes. But, very exciting. We're setting up an academy, and I've been appointed as the community manager up here in Logan. So that's kind of where I went to school. I went to Woodridge High and Woodridge Primary School. So this is kind of where the roots are. And, very exciting times ahead.
Yeah, awesome. And relinking with the Warriors must be good too.
Absolutely, yeah. They're one of my favourite clubs, obviously, and some really fun memories there.
Awesome. We'll get into some of that community stuff and why that's so important to you, and a heap of the work you're doing in that space, not just in your career, but a bit of side hustle stuff you've got going on, and just stuff you've done just out of the goodness of your own heart. Let's just talk about footy. Like, were you always going to play footy growing up?
Yeah. I started playing when I was 4 years old, and my uncle coached an under seven side, and my pop coached an under nine side. And by the time I was seven, I was playing seven, eight, nines. I was playing about four games every weekend, and just wherever I could get a game of footy, actually. So, when I was younger around those times, I kind of was playing up in Warwick, Killarney, out in the country. So you kind of played 2 years up above yourself anyway. So I think I had about a year at 4 years old, just running around chasing shadows. And then by the time I was five, six, I kind of got the gist of it and, started having a crack. So
it's good. And were you always a big lad?
Yeah, I was always reasonably big for my age, but I had some speed about me too. So to being a solid, chubby little kid, but I couldn't get around. I was pretty fast. At school, even at high school, I'd kind of win 100 or 200 kind of in the sprinting and that type of thing. So I was not super quick, but I was fast enough for a big guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And coming into first grade, that's my memory too. You were big, but you were mobile and quick, which wasn't necessarily the norm at that stage.
Yeah, well, again, I wasn't super fast, but I was fast enough to, to carry the weight around. Just in the coach's eyes.
So how do you get picked up to start playing at a decent level?
Oh, it was crazy. So I was just running around at Logan Bros here in Logan, around that under 15, under 17 kind of age group. And then I went over to play one season at Springwood Tigers. They were in the top comp as well. And we kind of, put together a bit of a super side. We had a couple of young guns come together. And that's where I got scouted by a guy named Brian Edwards Pinky, who has done a lot of scouting throughout the time. And he learnt under Cyril McConnell, the late Cyril. And, he kind of found me. He was actually at the Crushers at the time, and they were just coming into the competition. So they kind of recruited, I think it was about 120 or 200 kids into a big group. And then they cut that down from 200 to 100. Then they cut that down from 100 to 50. And this was kind of going on in Central Queensland and Brisbane kind of area. And then they kind of got it down to, I think it was a final 25 or 30. And I kept making the cut there. And only just, again, we got hand-eye coordination, fitness test, speed test, balance, you name it, jump. And I just kind of made it through those grades. And then, just played in the Crushers inaugural Colts team. I think it was an under 17s or 19s competition. And then, I was lucky enough to go on. And I was a part of that era where they only picked two fresh guys, and then the two guys came up from the grade below. So I debuted for reserve grade and the NRL on the same day. I played reserve grade, and then Bobby Linder picked six out of reserve grade to sit for NRL, and I just thought, they're just going to kind of put me there. And a lot of the time you'd get put on the bench and not get used and go have a shower. And I just thought, happy days, this is cool. And then at halftime, Bobby Linder said, we're going to use you in the second half, and I nearly shit myself.
Yeah, I bet.
Oh, my God, what's going on here? And then, he put me on with the last 20 to go, and that's when I made my debut against Western Magpies.
Yeah, wow. The Crushers have long folded, but is there anything that happens around them from that inaugural
season? Not really. I played in the President's Cup under 21 grand final, which we won. We were the last team. We beat Parramatta in 1996, and we were the last team to play in that competition. So it was finished after that. It fell over and went broke. But the Crushers hold the title. So we do have we did have a 20-year reunion, I think it was. We do kind of keep in touch that way. But other than that, there's no Crushers. Nothing's done it these days, unfortunately.
And then you get to the Eels, which is where my memory of you playing, you're a bit of a cult hero because of how much the spectators love chanting your name. How did that sit with you? Because it's a pretty big adjustment suddenly, like a fan favourite in only your, second or third year in first grade?
Yeah, I was only pretty raw when I went down there. I'd only played about 18 games or something for the Crushers at the time. And I was just one of the front rowers coming through at the time, and I was lucky enough to get a gig at Para. The Crushers were folding, and myself, Troy Pezzett, and Clinton Tchaikovsky, we went down there all together. So it was good to go down with someone you knew. But when I got down there, it was absolutely amazing. And again, if the Crushers were still around, I wouldn't have left. I would have been a one club person, guaranteed, because I just played for the love of the game, and that's honest. But we had to go down there at Para, and then when I went down there, there was like Dimmick, Pay, McCracken, Smith, all the Bulldogs boys who come over from Super League, we had young Luke Burt, then we had Nathan Kalis, Jason Kalis, Nathan Hindmarsh, Mick Vella, all went on and played for their state and their country. So it was very easy for me to go to Parramatta. We fell just short of two grand final games in those semis. It was amazing to go down there. And then we were successful. So the crowd, they definitely got behind me. and the team. And yeah, they all did the cult hero thing. I think it was just because I was a little bit out of the box. I wasn't an Adonis, or I wasn't muscle ripped up or anything like that. I was just a little fat kid having a crack. So.
That's cool. I love it. What was Brian Smith like? Because to me, whenever I've listened to him speak, he's a really fascinating guy to hear. He seems to understand the game a bit differently to most. I think he's probably been a little bit harshly judged because he's got many teams that maybe overachieved, and then instead he's looked at as perhaps failures. But I think a lot of those teams probably had no right to be there. What was the experience like for you?
He's one of the best coaches I've ever seen. Like you said, ahead of the game, he would go to America and come back with all these crazy ideas. He was the first. He was the first person to bring in the body hugging jerseys, which I didn't love at all. he came in with that one. He brought a lot of the video stuff in, a lot of the stats and all that kind of stuff. We were at Parramatta. We were the first to do that. So he was definitely a great coach. He was very intense. And that's where I think that was his kind of downfall in the end. I think by the end of the season, you were cooked, you were done. And when you needed the whips crack, and he just didn't have that extra edge to get us home, if you know what I mean. At the start, for example, he pulled me into the office one day and said, you need to lose weight, blah, 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 he goes. And then we started talking about food and what to drink and all that. And he goes, do you drink skim milk? And I'm like, no, not really. I can't really do skim milk. And he goes, and then he writes on this notepad, I can't drink skim milk. And then underneath it, he wrote, I can't play NRL. So, and he goes, see the two. And I'm like, I get it. So I started drinking skim milk. And he was a great coach, mastermind, got the best out of you, but then can break you as well. And I think he was just that intense. That may have been his downfall. But no, knowledgeable coach, mate. He was, he was one of the best for sure.
Yeah, it's good. So you're a lot more mentally and emotionally drained rather than physically.
Correct. Yeah, definitely. He was hard. He was fair with the physical stuff. 100%. It was all emotionally and mentally. You just cooked by the end of it.
Yeah, fascinating. It sounds like like you said, he's using things that are groundbreaking, but even that sort of the way looking at framing language, that's something that happens a lot in my field, but I imagine it's not happening as much there. Interesting. So how do you end up going to the Warriors? That must have been a massive call for you, to like a young fella growing up in Logan, to then take your whole life over to Auckland.
Absolutely. Well, the only thing I knew about New Zealand or the Warriors was the Once Were Warriors, the movie.
Yeah.
And, so I was shitting myself when I actually went over there. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on here? But no, so Brian Smith actually pulled me aside. I had a 1 year deal left to go on my contract, that in the favor of the club. And Brian Smith pulled me aside. And at that time, they were, the rule was changing to unlimited interchange to limited interchange. So they'll go into 10. I think it might have been 12 maybe or 10. And Brian Smith, we now know he was. They were trying to call my bluff and get me a little bit cheaper than what the option was. He just basically said the game's going to pass you by, with this interchanges. I'm a bit worried about, your fitness and all that. And I'm like, I was only a young kid still, and I'm like, okay, well, what does this mean now? I said, am I able to talk to other clubs or something? And he goes, yeah, you can go talk to other clubs and stuff. And so I just kind of left it at that. No hard feelings or anything. I'm just like, oh, okay. So I contacted my manager, Jim Bennigan, at the time, and he's like, and I said, oh, this is what's just happened. And next thing you know, Hugh McGahn, the Warriors recruitment man, come knocking on my manager. He phoned my manager, and we had a meeting at Darling Harbour there somewhere, and we kind of said, oh, all right, and yeah, we're keen, we're interested, because there was nowhere else to go really. And I think, I can't remember the situation, we didn't have a game, or we might have played a Friday night game, and where they whisked me off to New Zealand, me and my family, and we went we did a kind of big reconnaissance mission over there, secretly over there to kind of have a look around and see if what was happening. And basically they said to me, before you fly back to Australia, what do you want? And and you sign before you go back. And I'm like, oh God. So me and the manager kind of come up with a plan, and we went pie in the sky kind of stuff. And they went, yep, happy days, we'll sign you up. So that was great. And we ended up signing, I think I signed a 3-year deal on ridiculous kind of money. And then after, I think it was 8 months at the club went broke. So I didn't get any of it anyway. I lost quite a bit of money there, but I think we got saved 50 cents in the dollar or something towards the end there, or 70 cents or something. But we lost a bit of money.
Oh, I'd forgotten all that, because that's when that, what's his name? The Mad Professor or whatever come in and was that the
Well, the Thai Nui owned him there at one stage, and then Eric Watson came in.
Eric Watson came in
and saved everyone, and we all got our jobs back. And
Daniel
Anderson come on board, and then it was all happy days.
Yeah, and you had some good years there, including a grand final run in 2002. That must have been an unbelievable experience.
Oh, that was the most craziest time of my life. That whole year was just crazy and out of control. We just had a great side. We just had a really good side. Everyone was on the same page. Everyone was working towards the same goals, and the season was easy. We'd done the work, and the season was actually like we beat the Broncos for the first time in the club's history, and then we're just knocking off the Melbourne Storm at home, and we just kept winning games that we probably shouldn't have won at the stage we were at, but we were just good.
Yeah, awesome. Francis
Kelly, Henry Farfilli were doing coconut try celebrations and all this crazy stuff, and we were just having fun.
Awesome. Yeah, pretty handy side. Do you have much of a memory of that grand final week? Like, it must have been hysteria, was it, in Auckland?
Oh, yeah, it was out of control. We beat Cronulla over at Cronulla to go into the grand final. We kind of went straight home that afternoon. I think we left that night. I think it was an afternoon game, so we left straight away, went home. And there was about 10,000 people at the airport. We couldn't even get out. It was that, like, they were just ahead. That was on the, I think that might have been Sunday afternoon. So we kind of did a video session Monday. We had media. Then we had to be back to Australia for the grand final breakfast. Then we did the captain's run and then straight back into it again. So, it was very fast-moving week and trying to get tickets for family and flying family over and, it's pretty hectic. You don't get too much training in by then. And realistically, you don't really need to do much training in that week. But you do have to keep your mind on the job and and keep focused. And we were fine. We didn't get beaten by not focusing or anything like that. We just got beaten by a better side on the day.
Yeah, yeah. And right in the game at halftime from memory.
100%. Yeah. We were in the game. We were in the game for a long, long time. The turning point was, Freddie got knocked over and a bit of a blood eye and stuff, and he kind of snapped into gear there, and we couldn't hold the momentum in the end.
But an amazing experience to be part of. You go to the UK. Was that because you needed another opportunity, or like what was the reason for the shift?
The wheels were starting to fall off at the Warriors. There was a bit of turmoil going on. I think it all started with Mick Watson had a – we weren't winning too many games. This was 2004. We weren't winning too many games. We were competitive, but, we had higher expectations after winning the grand – after being in a grand final. Erica and Ali Lautiti had some words or something in an office, and Ali got marched straight out of the place on the spot. And that kind of upset the apple cart with a lot of the Polynesians, and we're all kind of like, what's going on here? And then I think I processed, then Daniel Anderson got the sack, and Terry and Kempe took over, Tony Kemp. And then I think, I don't know if I was second or what to go, but I had to leave because it wasn't, I wasn't getting a run. I was playing for Mount Albert in Auckland, but went to go to England. We got interest from England, I was an Australian quoted player. That's what they call them. And you have to have, and back then you had to have played 75% of your last games or whatever had to be with the NRL and all this. So I was running out of time to make a decision to go. And I had to go, so I kind of let the team know, and I was kind of gone within, I think, 2 weeks. I kind of told the boys, and next thing you know, I'm on the plane off to England. So went over to Castleford to try and get them out of relegation because they were struggling. So, yeah, I didn't want to leave. I was definitely not – I never wanted to leave any club, so it was just unfortunate circumstances, really.
But a good experience, like good cultural experience as much as football experience in the UK?
Warriors?
No, in the UK.
Going to England. Oh, yeah, going to England was, it's crazy. So I went to Castleford and they were struggling and everything like that. But Castleford's like a town that they know where you are, what you're doing every minute of the day. They live, breathe. The only thing in their town is footy. So I went from Warriors to that and they were just in your face, which was awesome. We were started winning and, you know, I was, again, I was the saviour and all that until we'd lost and I wasn't. But then when they got relegated, then I went to the London Broncos down in London after that. But when they got relegated, and in London, you're just a speck on the earth. No one even knows you. No one gives a care about you. And it was refreshing to be just like, oh, we're down here incognito. So yeah. I had a ball down there as well, kind of the epicenter of Europe, old London, and we got a chance to look around London. We went to a couple of men, the missus and the kids went to a couple of the other countries in Portugal and that, and I had a ball down there and really good experience, snow, cold, all that stuff as well, which we don't get here, so it was pretty cool.
How old were the kids at that stage?
I had a two-year-old daughter that was born in New Zealand. Yeah, and I had another girl over there. We were over there. I was over there for 2.5 years, and I had another daughter over there as well. So,
yeah.
So then, and then I had another daughter when I got back to Australia. So I've got three daughters in three different countries.
Nice.
Yes,
it's good. And then by the time they sort of start in school, you're back in Australia.
Yeah. We got back, and I only had the two-year-old and the newborn when I got back. I actually signed for the Dolphins when I come back, Dolphins Queensland Cup. Yeah, signed there and lasted 1 week of training and then quit.
Because you just over it. It was
too hard. I was over it. It was too hard and I was done.
Yeah, right. Now, I know a lot of athletes finishing professional careers have a lot of problem with that transition. Did you? In what way?
Yeah, well, not too much as in suicidal or anything like that, but definitely tough. You're coming from having wind blown up your ass, let's be fair. You're a professional athlete, a footy player, all the fans love you, to, you've got your teammates around you, you've got your network and all that, and you're on good money, buy whatever you want, spend whatever you want, all of a sudden gone, like instantly. That's what I struggled with. Not having that team around you, I've grown up since leaving school. I was told what to wear, what to eat, where to go, where to be, how to do this, how to do that, and then all of a sudden they go, right, there you go, big world, wide world, yours. And being over in England, no contacts, no kind of network in Australia other than family, and I'm like, ooh, yeah. So it took me 2 years to realize that I can't just buy whatever I want. I can't have whatever I want. And I've got to toe the line and get a job and answer to people. And so it was difficult. So kind of since then, I kind of linked up with the Arthur Beetson Foundation. And I'm an ambassador for those guys now. And what we do is we take all ex-NRL players, men and women, and we go out to the Aboriginal missions in far north Queensland, central Queensland, wherever. And we go out there and play a game of footy against their locals. We also uplift their community, give them iPads and footies boots and shoes and stuff like that. But what it is very, very, very important is to bring the NRL boys that have just recently retired back into that kind of feeling. It's not a piss-up tour or anything like that. We just make sure we get around them and help them out. And the NRL is much better at that now, that exit strategy and the welfare of the players. But my era, there was none of it, none of it. You just had to go and do your best. So, yeah, very tough.
Yeah. I had Adam Mogg on last year. And that's, he said something really similar in you having that experience where you're just getting all of this positive validation and mm-hmm. adulation to a certain degree. And he said that was one of the big things that suddenly you just, well, nobody's not the the right word, but I imagine it would almost feel like that from where you were, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And again, our era and Moggy as well, what qualifications do you leave with? You don't leave with anything, you know. Like, but obviously now it's much different. But, yeah, like you leave, and if you don't get a media gig or a coaching gig at one of the NRL clubs, what do? You go back to scaffolding, concreting and all that hard yakka, which we're good at. Ex-footy players are very good at. They're working hard. But, yeah, like what do?
Different pretty world. Intense. Yeah, that must be so rewarding. I did a trip with Clontarf up to Northern Territory and seeing the impact there of those guys on the Indigenous communities. It must just be so rewarding to go up there and the smiles and the energy and how much they get out of those experiences, yeah?
Yeah, next level. There's nothing like it. And probably the other side hustle that I have is I've been doing disability support work. And I've been coaching the Titans disability program down there, like helping out there. And to see the faces, when you say smiles, you see the faces on these young participants that have, you know, Down syndrome or intellectual disabilities, to see them smile and just have fun, that's now, that's what all this is about. You know, this stuff is just give it back. And it's, I'll do that for the rest of my life. I'll do it for the rest of my life, no matter what.
I love that. I want to come back to that because I know that's a really important part of your journey. I just wanted to ask, did you have much to do with Arthur Beetson when you joined that foundation?
100%, yeah. So when I was at the Crushers and I went to Parramatta, Arthur flew me and the family down to have a look around the Roosters headquarters.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was interested in signing at the Roosters at the time as well. So, yeah, I've known Arthur for a very long time. That was the first encounter, Connor, that I had with Arthur. And then I was actually picked I played in the Australian Aboriginal side with Arthur as our coach. Cliffy Lyons was our captain, and then the McGuinness brothers and, old school blackfellas. So, I played in that one. We played against Papua New Guinea in two tests. And, what a aura of a man he was. He was a great mate, a great guy. And I have a lot to do with the brothers now, Mark, Brad and Christians. So, it's given back, and I'll do that till I die.
Yeah, good man. And I love that you say that, because I think there's a lot of people that get stuck in, I just want to get to retirement so I can relax. But when you find something that lights you up, you do get to that point where you're like, well, I'll always do this because I just get much.
Yeah, I'm never going to retire. I've told the missus that as well. My job's not strenuous or not taxing on the body as such. So I'll do this until my brain, my body and mind can keep me going. So, I'll do it till the end, mate.
Yeah, that's purpose, mate. I love it. Now, you mentioned disability. That's something that's close to your heart. So one of your daughters has cerebral palsy, is that right?
Yeah, my middle daughter, born in England. Yeah, she just wasn't developing as the same as the first one. And we're like, this is a bit weird, a bit strange. She was premature. We got her tested and she was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. We had our challenges through that. I've always, my whole life's motto is everything happens for a reason. We were chosen to have a disabled daughter, and that steered me in that direction. I've never looked back. At the time, I was doing a few triathlons and a few marathons and stuff like that. We can talk about a bit later. But, and she was in the wheelchair, and I took her on a run one day when I was finishing a triathlon. I grabbed her out of the crowd and pushed her down, and she was waving to everyone, and she was only about something like that. And I said to her, would you like to do a triathlon? And she's like, oh, Yeah, because we used to do swimming with her for her treatment, her therapy. Yeah. I got a bit of a kind of a buoyancy vest made for her, and we just literally – and she was doing swimming anyway, so we just basically threw in the water, and I just jumped in with her, and she swam 100 metres, and then I pick her up out the water, and I take her to transition, and I throw her in her bike and put some shoes on her. And it was like a fixed-wheel bike that I ran behind her and pushed her along in that. And then we got her out of that and put her in a walking frame, and she walked 400 metres or a couple hundred metres or something. And the first one she ever did, the coming down the chute, everyone on both sides of the chute were just in tears. And I'm trying to cry, and I'm trying to run behind her, and she's kind of struggling away there. And from there, I've always been the one like, don't worry about your limitations. Let's see what you can do. And I do that now with the disability guys that I work with in the footy or whatever, my clients. I don't want to know your limitations. I'm sorry, I don't want to know your disability. I want to know where your limit is. And let's go up there somewhere, you know what I mean? Yeah, so so now she's on the pathway for 2032 Olympics as a seated thrower. Yeah, so she does shot put.
Good.
She does shot put and discus. So let's see where that takes her. But she's absolutely loving it, and she's been doing a little bit of 100-meter sprinting in a race runner, they call it. So yeah, I'm very proud of what she's doing, and she's starting to be a school teacher now as well in a wheelchair. So yeah, she's magic. Kicking goal actually.
That's awesome. That moment for the end of the triathlon, that's magic, mate. Oh,
yeah,
so
that's why you do it.
Yeah, but even just for you saying, oh, do you want to do one? And like having that mindset of you can do anything you want to do, that must have just been such a profound thing for her in her life to just give her that belief that, yeah, you can do all of these things.
100%, yeah. Again, like I said, I was never the greatest footballer, or I was never the fittest, but I used to just get shit done, and that's kind of was the motto when I was doing the triathlons. I even got it put on my tights or whatever. I was in the wetsuit thing. Get shit done. I've done marathons. I've done it, and I'm just do it to get shit done.
Love it. Is that something that you can recognize from your upbringing, that you had good role models that were like that, that just got in there and made things happen?
Yeah, just have a crack. My parents always kind of just have a crack. I grew up in Logan, and 99% of my friends went the wrong way. And, and my parents, I look back now and think my parents, they always found a way to pay for a rep side. My nan and pop used to have to drive me to training because my mum and dad were working and all that type of thing. So they just got shit done, you know. They just found the money, we fundraised and whatever we had to do, and we just got it done. And I've always just kind of lived by that, just have a crack, you know, see what happens.
Sports parents and grandparents are just legends, aren't they?
They are.
The lengths that they go to.
Yeah, and again, well, while you're in the moment, you don't see it. And I think my parents also, like, they just kept me busy. I was playing cricket in the off season, and then I was footy, and then I was touch footy, and I think I had a crack at AFL, and then indoor cricket. We played indoor netball. So I was just busy, and then when all the partying was going on, I was busy doing something. So they kind of steered me in the right direction.
That's good. Now, I wanted to talk about parenting. Like, we both do a bit of work in that space with young athletes, and we're talking before we hit record about the importance of that. What are some of the things that you guys do at Logan around giving that awareness to parents of elite athletes to make sure that they're on the same path and actually taking the steps to make sure they're empowering their child, not inadvertently putting more pressure on?
Yeah, so when I retired, I got a job with the Canberra Raiders in Logan about 10 years ago before I did disability support. And when I talk to the coaches, I do coaching updates and try and upskill them with, you know, real kind of level of knowledge. And every time it came back to parents are a pain in the ass. Every single time, you know, they don't know how, and they didn't know how to deal with parents, you know, and parents at the end of the day just want what's best for their kid. We all know that.
Of course.
99% of coaches that are in the game are just coaching their kid. They don't want to go on and coach NRL or anything like that. They just go on the journey with their son and daughter. So, and it's been kind of recognized in the last few years that, you know, we need to kind of, and it's not the parents' fault, it's just they haven't been educated around what it takes to have a young athlete or a, you know, a young professional person. They all think their kid's going to be great and going to go and do everything like that. So, we've just set up an academy here for under 16-year-old kids here in Logan. We'll expand on that in the coming years, but we're only kind of very new. But we've identified that, yes, we need to produce really good humans, these footy kids. And if one or two make it to the NRL, there's going to be 100 that aren't. So we really need to make sure that they're kitted up with all the qualifications that needed, like just getting a license and that type of thing. But we also have recognised that, you know, mums and dads can be a big problem, especially in the Polynesian community where mum's the best cook in the world and she cooks all the best food, and it's not necessarily the best food for a young footy player. So we just need to educate them around that, around how to treat them. There's a big workload. They're doing a lot of work in school now as well. So, you know, from the time they wake up at 6 a.m. in the morning, they're not getting home till 7-8 o'clock at night. And they've done, you know, let's say they've done 3-4 hours of physical training nearly every day. So they're getting worked really hard. So, parents, it's not their fault, but we do need to just give them some education around it. Again, a lot of these parents are now kind of our age, you know, that 40, 30, 40, 50 year old, and they've definitely come from through the old school upbringing, whatever's like, we must eat it and all this kind of stuff. So, we're trying to do as many educational programs and sessions with the parents as possible. We see that as just as important as the physical stuff we're putting into the athletes.
Yeah, love it. And the important part that you actually mentioned a few times there is it's not the parents' fault, but they're doing the best they can with what they know. It's just an education piece to get them on the same page, mate.
Yeah, well, they're growing up. They only know what their mum and dad did for them, and back in the day was acceptable. It's not acceptable anymore. So, you know, we've just got to try and upskill them a little bit or give them some knowledge so then they can not make the same mistakes that their parents made kind of around, you know, slapping him around the head or making him go out for a 5K run and get a bit fitter and all this kind of stuff. Just be a bit smarter.
Yeah, especially like you said, like for everyone that makes it, there's hundreds that just don't. Right. And so it's more about their future in whatever field they go into rather than it just being about the sport.
Absolutely.
Now, a big part of what you do now is giving back. You obviously, you're doing it in the work that you do with the Warriors, and you've done it in a whole lot of other different spaces. Tell us a little bit about this work that you do, putting on marathons. You've got one now, which we'll mention towards the end, that you're raising funds for. Tell us a little bit about how you got into that space.
Again, it was probably, I've done personal training and massage and all that back in the day, you know, like when I was playing. So I've always been interested in how the body works, and, you know, I've always had to kind of work hard to be an athlete, to be honest with you. And I put on a lot of weight when I retired, and I ended up putting an ad in the paper in Logan here. Everyone kind of knew who Mark Tukey was, the old footy player and stuff. And I put an ad in the paper, who wants to come and do a marathon with me, 42K? And I got five crazies to reply, and we met down the park, and I told them kind of what my idea was, and they're like, "Yep, we're in." And then I got a school teacher that from Marsden High, Grant Stevenson. I said, "Mate, I need you to be our coach and our nutritionalist," and he was all qualified in that field, and he said, "I'm in. This is great." So we just started going. So I lost, you know, I started losing weight, and everyone lost weight, and we got some protein for them and everything like that, and we did our first marathon. And that was kind of the first, it was kind of where it started. I was doing a few boot camps and things like that, just trying to get fit with everybody. And I started running them. And then I thought, I set up Big Tuke Sports then, and I thought, why don't we start doing a marathon here, right here in Logan? So I started the Logan Running Festival, 42K, and it was a park kind of loop marathon that not many people were doing. And it was designed around, you're not on the road, so we don't need to cut any roads off. So there's no time limit. And that was the kind of unique part of the marathon that I do. There's no time limit. Because when you do Gold Coast, you've got to be done by 6 hours, or they put you in the shuttle bus and take you home, and you don't get to finish. And I'm like, nah, well, I'm not an elite runner or anything like that, but we've got to get everyone an opportunity to finish a marathon. Like, it's a big deal. And I just kind of started that one, and now I've got – we've got three runs now that we do. One of them's for endometriosis, another one's for mental health, and running festival again for mental health as well. So that's how I kind of stumbled in on it. Since then, I've done some boxing events. I've done golf. I do golf days currently. I run quite a few golf days. That's kind of my little passion. And I caddy for blind golfers now, and I'm really big in the blind golf. My blind golfer that I caddied for just finished number one in Australia on the Order of Merit, and we just went to Canada last year in October, and he won the world title over there as well. What? So he's kind of he goes really well, and again, it's just passionate. And every golfer says, "How the hell does a guy play golf blind?" And I ask the same question. It's bloody hard, and I can't master the stupid game, but I keep trying. And these guys, it's just inspirational to see blind people trying to play the hardest game in the world.
Yeah, the same questions were started going through my head. So it must be, because they're taking on all of their other senses, so it must be a feel thing, is it?
It's like you just hit the nail on the head. When I go to golf coaches and golf, that do it, and they're like, and I'm like, don't worry about eye-hand coordination. So everything around golf is eye-hand coordination. Everything's got to be in time and all that. Theirs is tempo and feel. So they've just got to be so reliant on their swing, because they can't relocate the ball once you've put the club there.
Huh. So what's he playing off? Like, is he?
He's off 20. He's a 20 handicapper, and over at the Worlds in day one, he hit 88 off the stick. He had his best round ever. 88 off the stick, yeah.
It's because he's got a good caddy, right?
We like to say so. My job's to read the green and to find his ball.
That's all I need to do. So what about directional, that sort of thing? Like, does he
I have to kind of square him up sometimes. So my golfer is actually visually impaired. He can see to a degree. He can only see 5%. He's got tunnel vision. Most of the blind golfers have tunnel vision, retina pigmentosa. And, they're basically looking at a straw. So if he hits a straight ball, every now and then he'll pick it up. But in general, he'll lose where his ball went. Mm-hmm. But he can kind of work out kind of where the hole is and the markers and stuff like that. But I've caddied for guys that are totally blind, absolutely can't see a thing. And, it's just so inspirational.
Wait, unbelievable. And I love that you've got this passion for sharing these stories, because they're the stories that, like you said, the reaction from the crowd when your daughter's finishing the end of the triathlon. Magic. I think I need to get you in contact with a mate of mine who's doing some work in the Paralympic space.
Yes.
And he is someone I worked with in television, so he's trying to really generate that concept of the stories.
100%.
I reckon there'd be something there that we'll talk about once we finish up here, mate. But that, I mean, stories in sport are always thing that grab our attention, but those stories when they're, as you so well put it, like, don't tell me what your restrictions are. Let's see if we can test the limits. So
100%.
The run you're doing coming up is for a mental health charity. You lost a brother to suicide. You also lost a mate to suicide. So again, this is like a pretty important thing in your life. Do those experiences shape you in a positive and negative way?
Positive. I try and take all the positives. Like suicide, and again, this is only a personal opinion, I think it's a selfish decision. When they decide to do it, but I totally understand that this is their mindset, and they think that's their only way out, and I get it. But I think it's a very selfish, because all of us buggers have to deal with the ripple effect after it, and it is what it is, and it's an epidemic going in around in our society at the moment, because everything's just so tough. And I do whatever I can to help out in this space. I've ridden rode a bike, a push bike to Canberra from Brisbane. That was for cerebral palsy, but I'll take on any challenge for the sake of helping someone. So I think it was Luke Alexander. Oh, no, it was Troy Warner, a mate of mine from Para, the Para podcast.
Yeah, I know Troy. Yeah.
Yeah, he contacted me and said, oh, this guy Luke wants to see if you want to do a walk at Magic Round for mental health. And I'm like, yeah, I'm in. I didn't know how far it was or what it was. I just thought, I said, I'm in. And then he goes, and then Luke contacted me with some details and that, and it was a 50K walk, which is, marathons are a thing of my past. I haven't run one for quite a while, but it's a walk. It's 50K, and I can put left foot after right foot after left foot after right foot for a long time. And I said, yep, let's do it. And I mentioned it to the missus, and she's like, let's do this. This is amazing. We're rallying around, and I'm going to release some stuff on Facebook to try and generate a bit of money. I think my missus already has, actually. And I'm going to get as many people to come and walk with me as possible. And we're just going to go for a good long walk and then go watch some footy, have a beer afterwards.
Oh, mate, you're tempting me. I like the sound of that. I'm not a massive fan of running long distances, but maybe walking could be more than.
I cannot run anymore. I'm hopeless at it now. Oh, my God. I'm getting old.
That's good. Yeah, it was actually Troy's post. He put it in the one of the para groups where I saw your post that your missus must have shared. And I'm like, oh, we got to talk about this because,
So we've got them. I think they've got 60-odd ambassadors, so people of celebrity as such that have done something in sport. I think there's even like a fitness model in there and just people that are icons in their own kind of world. And so we're all just going to go for a stroller. I think we started our Suncorp and we'll go for a walk around the Brisbane River, 25K, come back and then do it all again. So it's going to be interesting. Take me about, I'm worked it out when the way I walk, it's going to be about 8 hours worth of walking. Again, you know why I do it is because I can.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome.
Because I can, because some days I might not be able to walk to the litter box. No, you just don't know.
Yeah, love that.
Kind of hurt. I know that.
Exactly. Well, I was talking to someone the other day who'd done an Ironman triathlon and how hard that was and how long it took. And he said one of the elite guys said to him, I couldn't do that. Like, I'm over. I know I'm going to be done in this amount of time, whatever those elite guys do it in it.
Yep, they do about 12 hours or something.
Yeah,
so 9 hours, I think. Nine hours.
But he said, I couldn't imagine going at that pace for 20 however many hours. And, like, I'd be the same with the marathon. I think I'd just want to get it done as quickly as possible if I had to do one.
I've done eight marathons, and I kind of got it down to a walk-run strategy. But everyone used to say to me, oh, you know, what time? What's your best time? And I'm like, I want to finish. That's what I want to finish. I want to finish, and that's all. I did a half Ironman down at Kingscliff, and I did 7 hours and 10 minutes, I think it was, or something like that, to do half. And immediately when I finished, I'm like, okay, double that. That's 14 hours 20, and I've got a little bit of got a couple of hours extra in the up my sleeve for a bit of pain. Why not? But I just haven't got around to be able to fit that in the schedule. But it was always something that I really, really wanted to do was an Ironman, just to say I've done it, just to finish it.
Yeah. Wow.
But, yeah, it's definitely tough. It's definitely tough.
I can't get my head around that. I'm not a swimmer, so that's the first part. But I just
can't. I became a swimmer when I'm a shit runner. I could always swim okay, but I used to do a lot more swim training because it was better than running training.
Yeah. That first marathon, was it like a euphoric feeling getting it done? Like was?
I had there was eight of us or 11 of us. That had done all the training, and it was just a walk marathon. Like we all designed just to walk it. A couple of us then did a bit of jogging and stuff like that. But at the finish, so one of our guys went hypo low. He's a diabetic. At about, I think it was about 15K. So of 42, he went hypo low, like pass out, going to die. So we sugared him up with lollies and got him some Powerade and stuff like that. We had a couple drop back with him and get him through. Then he went hypo high, hyper. So he went high. Yeah, he got carried over the finish line, 42K from his wife and the trainer, that Grant Stevenson, and they got him through 42K, and he was in a world of hurt from 15. I was struggling, but for him to do that superhuman effort, and they are lifelong friends. We keep in touch, every single one of us that did that marathon. We went through a whole lot of pain together, and, to say euphoric, yeah, it was a big achievement for all of us.
Yeah, and I imagine for you, who's bringing this community together, like even more so because like you're seeing the impact it's having on these guys as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I went on and did my first three marathons in the first 12 weeks. So what? I went back to back to back. Yeah, I did Gold Coast, Brisbane, Sunny Coast. And after, when I did Gold Coast, I didn't train anymore for the other two because I thought I'd done enough. Yeah, and I tore an ITB in the Sunny Coast one after 10K.
Gone. And just kept going anyway? Oh, you know.
Yeah, and that was the biggest. I had the most demons I've ever had in my life that day. Yeah, that was a tough day. I did it on my own. It was the only one I did on my own, and I was in a world of hurt.
So physically, you obviously have to be strong to play in the NRL. But the things you're talking about here, like, do you have a knowledge or an idea of where you built up the mental strength?
It's just mental, mate. Yeah. Well, again, to play in the NRL, you have to be mentally strong. And this is what I say to all the NRL boys, even retired ones, and that you could go. Like, I could literally walk out this door now and go do a marathon. Just cold turkey. To tell the truth, one of my Logan ones that I did here, I did one cold turkey. I didn't run 1 meter in training, and it took me 7 hours and 15 minutes to finish it. And I tore a calf, I strained everything, but I just got it done. I just left and right. If you don't stop, you'll get it finished. And that's kind of my mentality. And I just did it to see how it would go. It was absolute torture. It was my marathon and there was no time limit. So I was the last one to finish, and I just treated it as I'm at the back of the field here and I'll just clean up, all the stragglers that were, and I was last to finish. I was the dead set last. Yeah, it was torture. But again, it was just, it was a dark day in my life, and we get over it and we have a drink and we move on.
That's why you're hardcore. I love it.
That's what this 50K is about, Owen. I'm nearly 50 and I'm going to do 50K. Why not? Love you know it. What my thought was? I'm at Magic Round anyway, so I might as well just go for a walk. Yeah. As long as it didn't clash with the Warriors doing a captain's run and the Warriors game, I was happy. So it was all good. Friday works perfect for me.
Oh, to the Friday. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And then off to Suncorp and someone else can be bringing you drinks because you won't be walking to the bar.
Yeah, I might be in a walking frame, but it'll be real good.
Oh, so good. One of the sort of reoccurring things that I'm seeing here, Mark, is that you've just got this ability, just yes, to get things done, but it's your ability to bring people together, even to the point where other people know that if they contact you, they're going to get that as well. Where do you reckon that's come from? Like, are you naturally a nurturing, caring, like, person? Yes. Like that? Yeah?
Yeah, I am. I don't know where. I've always, even when I played, I always was last to leave the field. I would always stop and talk to every single fan. I never really brushed anyone. I'm just so grateful to be in my position. I'm just a little bloke from Logan. A bigger bloke from Logan. And I just grew up, just having a go at everything, doing whatever. And, there's just no limits for me. I just, like I said, I jumped in the ring and had a crack and got bashed up and, just for charity, and it's just if it doesn't kill you, just have a crack. It might not be fun, but again, a lot of the times when I did a lot of my marathons and a lot of my events and a lot of my training, I'm having a yarn with people, just chatting to, well done, good on you, that's awesome, yeah, oh, how you feeling, yeah, my legs are sore, like just having a chat, because I will not wake up in the morning and go, oh, I need to go for a run today. No. But if my mate says, do you want to come for a walk or do you want to go for a run? Oh, hell yeah. Do you want to go for a bike ride? I'm in. If there's someone to talk to, someone, if we're doing it for, if we can go and hang out with a few, yeah, let's do it. But I'll never get up and go, oh, let's go and have a run, or I need to go do some training. Stuff that.
Yeah, I'm a bit the same.
I need to set a goal, and that's honest. I need to set a goal, and I need to go, okay, I've got this 50K walk coming up. So between now and then, I'll do a half marathon, and I'll probably do a couple of 30, 35K training walks. That'll take me kind of 4, 5, and 6 hours, just go and have a stroll. It'll be just down the beach. It's not going to be – I'm not doing any hill training or anything like that. It'll just be cruisy, sip a cup of coffee kind of training. But it's just about left after right after left after right, and do it for a very bloody long time.
Love it. You're saying how you just get in there and do things, but you did say there's one thing you wouldn't do again, and you mentioned it just before, boxing. So you've part of your charity business, Big Tooks. You do some boxing events. So the first one you're thinking, oh, how hard could it be? I'll jump in as well.
100%. I've done a million. I've never had a fight in my life, but I've done a million hours in the ring training to get fit and try and lose weight. So and my brother come up with an idea, because he works on a construction site and blokes punch on all the time. And I said, well, why don't we start an event called Square Up? And they're like, oh, yeah, what's that? And I'm like, you pick your mate that you've got a beef with. We'll pair yours up as long as you're the same weight, and we'll throw you in the ring and you square up and you have a crack. And we're like, okay. So I kind of put it out there, and I'm like, yeah, I'll have a go. And it was funny because I kind of selected my opponent wisely. And then that one, my first guy dislocated his shoulder in training. And I'm like, why are you even training, you idiot? Yeah. But so he dislocated his shoulder. I had another one hyperextend their elbow, fell down the stairs. Oh. Yeah. And then I had another one had to pull out late or something like that. And I'm like, bloody hell, I wanted to have a fight. So I put it out there somewhere. And this young kid, like I'm saying I'm 40 years old by now, 40, 42. Yeah. And this young kid, about 24, he was my kind of weight, and I'm like, yeah. And he goes, oh, I'll fight you. And I'm like, sweet as, you're on. Well, he punched the living shit out of me. The whole fight, I just jabbed, and moved around forever. And it was only three rounds of a minute and a half. By the third round, he was walking straight through my jab. It wasn't it. It was like custard. And then as the final bell of the whole fight went, he just hit me with the right straight on the button. And I saw stars. I hit the rope. I was going down, and then he cuddled me, and I'm like, "Oh, you beauty!" So, and that was over. So, I lasted the distance, but I got punched from pillar to post. And my missus said to me at the time, she goes, "I'll let you do everything you want.
Yeah,
never ever again do boxing." And I went, "I agree with you." So, the boxing career was 1-0, and I'm never boxing again.
Oh, mate, I'm with you. I've done a little bit of boxing training, and like, I'm like, how do you do this plus get punched? Like, it's like, it's just
different. It's running away from the punches. It hurts the legs more. I take my hat off to the guys. Again, boxing is one of my most favorite sports. I love it, and I know a lot of boxers around in Logan and around, and yeah, it's just not for me. They are. It's one of a kind, that sport, mate.
Hardcore.
You've got to be cut out for it, I tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. You've had a lot of different projects on the go. You're doing lots of good work helping in so many different areas. Is there something that you haven't done yet that you see in the future that you're sort of thinking, oh, maybe there's a new opportunity for me?
Yes, I've got plenty going on.
Yeah,
here.
Go on. I can see the smile come on your face.
Yeah. No, mate, I've got a few ideas. One idea is around a fundraising idea for junior sport, and I worked really hard on it just before COVID, and COVID hit, so I was lucky that we didn't launch it or roll it out. But I'm in my position now in Logan with my contacts that I'm reconnecting with again. I think it might be time to revisit that idea around just helping junior sports clubs raise money, because it's always a problem. The funding's always a problem. And then I have an Ironman idea as well, to run an event. So it's watch this space on that one. I think it might happen. I had a meeting the other day about it, and I've just got to get the logistics of it. It's very, very hard to find 180K to bike ride.
Yeah, right. So
that's a very big challenge.
You've got the 6 meter pool for them to do a million laps off. Have you? Like you do it all?
Yeah. It's funny you say that. Don't laugh. There could be an option in a 50 meter pool. But yeah, I've got a few ideas around that. And again, my life, my motto in life is, as long as you're doing it for the right reason, have a crack. And again, I'd only be doing it to help people achieve fitness goals, weight loss goals, that type of thing. So one of the other things that I really want to get off the ground here in Logan is I want to start a Warriors disability team. So I'm in the process of doing some stuff with a local organization here, Active Heroes. They're in that field, and I've just kind of connected with those guys, and I really want to run a little disability program, not necessarily a team, maybe just a program. But the Titans run, I've been with the Titans one for the last 3 or 4 years, and they are the best in Australia, probably the best in the world at running rugby league programs for all abilities. Yeah. And I'd love to mimic their program up here and give these young participants a chance to play against the Titans. They play on the big field. They play, and they'll be Warriors against Titans with the jersey on, and that's what the kicks that they get by just putting the jersey on. They don't even need to play, just to have that logo on their jersey, which is an absolute pipe dream. They would never have, their parents don't even think it could ever have happened in their world. And I even think if someone turns up in a wheelchair, we tuck a footy under their arm and we push it along, and we can slap them with a pad or something and make it feel like a game of rugby league. Whatever the experience, if it puts a smile on their face, let's do it. Let's Love do it. It. You know, that's so that's kind of my take on anything like that. If it can put a smile on someone's face, let's have a crack.
Absolutely. Well, you've definitely put a smile on my face today, Mark. You do a bit of speaking. I imagine that goes pretty well. I bet you're a good storyteller too, yeah?
Oh, I can tell a story here and there, but my problem is I drop an F-bomb every now and then, and I need to sharpen that up a little bit.
Yeah, especially if you're talking to a bunch of
kids at school and stuff, yeah. And I'm going to be doing a bit of that. So, yeah, so I've just got to take my time. I get excited, and I get very passionate when I speak, especially around, I've lost a brother to suicide. Got a daughter with disability. I work in the Aboriginal space. So I've got a lot of stories and a lot of knowledge around everything like that. And I love chatting to people about it. That's what I do.
Well, mate, thank you so much for coming on, having a chat to me. I'm blown away by how much you do. in all of those different spaces, but I can also see why, because I feel in your energy, I love your passion, and the probably the thing out of everything else here, like you talked about going across limits and everything, but everything that you do and even just the stories you tell, it's fun, mate. You're making it fun, you're making it enjoyable, and that's how life should be, right?
That's what I tell everyone, in my workspace, it's not a day at work. I'm having fun in life, and I'm just living the dream. And just quickly, I couldn't really do this without my wife at the moment. My wife, Rach, she's very supportive, and she's on the same page as me, actually. So she's, we love just doing stuff together. And as soon as we come up with an idea, we run with it. So we're actually starting to work together with events now as well. So. That's exciting, where we kind of take this event business on the side that she's kind of started. And we're looking forward to it. Watch this space. Keep an eye on the Big Tooks website.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll make sure we get that in the show notes, including where people can donate to the walk coming up
for Magic. Yeah, Embrace.
Like I said, I'm tempted to come join you.
Other people
would be too. So we'll make sure we get your details in there, and if anyone wants to reach out.
The plan is, if you don't have to do the whole 50K, so it's a 25K loop, then another 25K loop. So what we're saying, or what I'm telling people, is if 50 scares you, you can do one lap with me, and then another group can join me on the second lap, kind of thing. So I'm looking for the competent walkers to start with me, so we can go harder. And then when I'm dying, I need someone to drag me home.
I love it, mate. So good. Thank you so much for coming on and having a chat, Mark. It was thoroughly entertaining but also inspiring, mate. Well done.
Absolute pleasure, mate. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. What a great fella. Big Tooks is living proof that purpose doesn't have to end when footy does. In many ways, it's only the beginning. From elite sport to community leadership, from deep personal loss to creating genuine connection, this conversation is a reminder that impact comes from showing up, doing the work, and looking after the people around you. Whether it was his honesty around mental health, the way he speaks about parenting and inclusion, or that magic moment watching his daughter cross the finish line, there are lessons here for every sports parent and every bloke who wants to live with meaning, not limits. We mentioned it at the end, but if this one moved you, Tooks has a charity walk happening around NRL Magic Round. You can donate, get involved, or even lace up and walk with him. Check the links in the show notes. If you enjoyed this conversation, make sure you subscribe and follow the podcast so you don't miss future episodes. And if this one hit home, share it with someone who needs to hear it, because none of us are meant to do this alone. You've taken the time to listen to this whole episode. Now it's time to take action. Commit to one thing you've learned today and make it happen. And to avoid any obstructions, join the Sport is Life movement by clicking on the link in the show notes.